Hello everyone, welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Brandon and today we are starting our Nature article. It is February 9th, 2015. We're on page 18 and I do have two panelists here with me today and I'll have them introduce themselves.
Hi listeners, it's Amanda here.
Hi, Lois here and glad to be here.
Yes, and we do have kind of a heavy topic for the next few days. We are talking about nature's dying migrant worker. And let's talk about that word migrant, Amanda.
Okay, we see in our specialized terms, we have a migrant worker. And a migrant is someone who moves from one place to another place. And of course, a migrant worker would be a worker moving from one place to another place to find work.
Okay, and so in this case, we're talking about bees because they do move around, don't they, Lois?
They certainly do. It's a really catchy topic and a catchy title as well, Nature's Dying Migrant Worker, because we just think of migrants all the time as people, but that they've applied this to the bee, it makes it a little intriguing.
It is, and then we see that word dying. We don't like to talk about that, but we're talking about how these bees are dying off. And that is a great concern for all of us. It should be, at least. We don't usually pay attention to that. We go to the store and we buy products and we go home and we eat them and then we don't think anything of it. But if one day those products aren't there anymore, maybe we'll be more concerned, right, Amanda?
Right. I think once we see it disappearing from our shelves, like the fruits and vegetables that the bees help to produce, then maybe we will start to notice, well, what's happening with the bees?
That's right. And so, of course, the pollination process, how bees pollinate, you probably are familiar with that, listeners. Maybe you're not very scientific, though. Of course, when pollen is transferred from one plant to another of the same species, it becomes possible for the blossom to produce fruit or vegetables. And so it's very important that we have enough bees. And right now we're seeing a huge decline in bees. And it's not just in North America. This article focuses on the United States, but it's also in Canada.
Yes,
as well.
It is. It's definitely happening there. I was surprised how bad it is, especially in the province I was raised in.
That's right. And it's also a problem here in Asia, right, Amanda?
Yes, it is. And even some universities are doing research, trying to find out why this is happening.
Okay. And so it's a problem worldwide. We're going to talk about it for the next 3 days. And in this article, we have lots of vocabulary words to discuss, even words that aren't highlighted. There are so many words. So get your pen out and your highlighter and get ready to maybe learn some new words or review some that you've learned before. We're on page 18. Right now, we will have our first reading for today.
Nature's Dying Migrant Worker. Farmers and researchers try desperately to save the dying honeybees. On a cool January day, Steve Ellis culled his sick bees. He opened the hives one by one to see how many had survived. The painful chore has become an annual ritual for Ellis. Ellis of Minnesota is one of 1,300 commercial beekeepers from across the United States who migrate to California each year, along with nearly 2 million hives, for the single largest pollination event in the world. Below him in the sprawling valley, nearly 1,400 square miles of almond trees were ready to burst out. To grow into a nut, every single blossom would need at least one American honeybee. Since 2006, scientists have struggled to explain the mysterious mass die-offs of honeybees. But here in America's food basket, the escalating stakes are laid out clearly.
So we see in our deck there that farmers and researchers, they're trying desperately to save the dying honeybees. And so if you're trying to desperately do something, that means you're doing what, Lois?
Well, if you're desperately trying to do something, it means you're usually working at some, here we're working, well, I was going to say working desperately. I don't want to use that word, but maybe we're working ferociously at this. We want to be able to save these honeybees.
You're putting a lot of effort into
Lots of effort.
And so that's what the farmers are doing and researchers. And of course, researchers are very important. They need to find out exactly the cause of the problem and figure out the solution, hopefully. And the farmers, of course, they have a vested interest in this because it's their business. They are raising these bees, and also you think of farmers who are, they have crops and so forth. All of this is working together, and so they all have a vested interest.
Exactly. And when you think of farmers, they would be working quickly at this because they don't want to lose a season, and they want to start off the next season on a high note.
That's right. Okay, so the honeybees are dying at a very fast rate. And so we start the article on a cool January day, and we meet a man named Steve Ellis. And what is he doing, Amanda?
Well, Steve is a farmer. He's a bee farmer, and he's culling his sick bees. And to cull something means to remove something. This is usually with regard to animals or plants. And so what he's done is he's opened the hives, the bee hives, one by one to see how many bees have survived. So some of them have become sick. He has to remove them from the hive. And that's why they say it's a painful chore. This is his livelihood, how he makes his money. So it's very painful for him to have to remove these sick bees from the hive.
Yeah, it's a painful chore. And he is a commercial beekeeper. And we have this word, cull. Now, that's not a word you will see often. I don't suggest that you spend a lot of time on that word, but it's good to know what it is and the meaning of this article. And so Ellis is from the state of Minnesota, that is in the Midwest, the Midwestern part of the United States. And he is one of 1,300 commercial beekeepers. And so commercial meaning that this is his business, right?
That's correct. And when we started this article, I was kind of laughing again at the beginning because I was thinking, he's in Minnesota. I've never heard of a cool day in January in Minnesota. I'm sure it was a cold day.
Yeah, I'm sure it was cold.
to many of our listeners, they would qualify it as cold.
Yes, and I'm from the southern part of the U.S. I would think it was cold there too, I'm sure. Okay, so he is a commercial beekeeper, but he's not actually, in this paragraph here, he's not actually in Minnesota. Where is he, Amanda?
Well, he's gone to California. It says that they go over, migrate to California. Migrate also meaning going there, moving to a different part, along with nearly 2 million hives for the single largest pollination event in the world. So he's gone to California to this pollination event.
Okay. And as you look in the next sentence, we see that there are lots of almond trees. 1,400 square miles of almond trees were ready to burst out. And we see the word sprawling there in the sprawling valley. What does the word sprawling mean?
Sprawling means it's just growing, increasing in size. We often hear that for a sprawling city.
That's right.
You will hear that. Here we see it's obviously almonds would be classified as an almond orchard, so it's sprawling.
So it's a large area. And then if we back up there, we see the word pollination, and you may be familiar with that word, but of course that's the process of carrying pollen from a male part of a flower to the female part of another flower of the same type. And this is what bees do. It can also occur by the wind. The wind can cause that to happen, but we rely on bees a lot to carry that pollen. And as they do, of course, as I said earlier, it makes it possible for plants to blossom, produce fruit or vegetables.
Right. I always kind of think of a bee when I knew about this at a very young age. It's almost like they're holding a little eyedropper and they pollinate what needs to be pollinated, and that's where we get our nuts or our fruit or whatever.
And they're not doing this like on purpose. They're not, oh, I'm going to go pollinate. They're feeding off of the plants, and as they go, it rubs off on the other plants. And so it's just how God created created everything to work. And so when they're dying off, it causes a bigger problem than you would think. Now, when I think of bees dying off, I'm like, oh, I love honey. I don't want bees to die off. But, of course, it's much more than just honey. And so, anyway, they're in California. They have all these almond trees there. And what do we learn next about these almond trees?
Well, we learned that to grow into a nut, that every single blossom needs at least one honeybee to pollinate it. And for it to produce the nut. And so I think they go to this event to see the honeybees or collect honeybees that are pollinating these things so they can bring them back to their healthy hives.
And I like this. You get it paints a picture in your mind, really, with this sentence. You need one honeybee, you know, in order to grow a nut. Every single blossom would need it, at least one American honeybee. So I think that kind of puts things in perspective, right?
Mm, right.
Well, and then we go back to 2006.
Right. And it says, since 2006, scientists have struggled to explain the mysterious mass die-offs of honeybees. But here in America's food basket, the escalating stakes are laid out clearly. And food basket, some of our readers might not be that familiar with, Brandon and Amanda, but it's in our specialized terms. And food basket is the large farming area that provides other areas with food. So in many countries, you will know the area that does this, and you will call it the food basket. Mm-hmm. I know it in my country of Canada. I'm sure Amanda knows it in her country of New Zealand. So a lot of countries basically have this.
Yeah, they're growing a lot of food, and it's providing food for other areas, right? Now, as we also see here, it's a mysterious thing. Since 2006, scientists have been trying to figure this out, this mysterious mass die-offs. Now, when we see that phrase, mass die-offs, that means there are a lot of bees dying.
Right. Mass meaning a large number of, and die-off meaning that they are dying off. So, a lot of bees. And, you know, we're talking about millions of bees when we're talking about this.
Right. So we see here in America's food basket, the escalating stakes are laid out clearly. And if something is escalating, it's growing. Right.
Right.
And then if there are stakes involved, there are kind of risks involved. And so the escalating stakes are laid out clearly. In other words, you know what's involved. You know the risks involved. And so that's always helpful. If you don't know the risks involved, you may not act as quickly, right? Yeah. You may not do what you need to do. But here we know what needs to happen, but we just have to figure out, hopefully, what we can do, if there's something we can do to help fix the problem.
Right.
Okay? And so we are going next into the signs of a bleak future. That doesn't sound like a great thing to talk about, but hopefully we will learn a lot from this next reading.
Signs of a bleak future? Modern farm economics have created an enormously productive system of genetically engineered, chemically dependent agriculture. But it relies on just one domesticated insect to deliver a third of the food on our plate. And that insect is dying, a victim of the food system that has come to depend on it. Recent research points to a complex triangle of causes. Pesticides, a flowerless rural landscape dominated by cash crops, and the spread of parasites and diseases. Together, they inflict damage on the honeybees that crisscross the country each spring and summer, like migrant laborers to pollinate everything from almonds in California to apples in Maine. In the past several decades, the number of crops that depend on bees for pollination has quadrupled, even as the number of hives available to pollinate them has dropped by half. Every winter, beekeepers continue to lose a fourth to a third of their hives, raising fears that the decline of these remarkably resilient insects will soon limit the production of foods that Americans take for granted.
Well, when we talk about something being bleak, that just means there's not much hope, right, Amanda?
Right. Bleak, often we refer to the weather as being bleak. In other words, it's not really sunny and a beautiful day, but maybe it's rainy and cold. And it's not a positive word.
Yeah, we can use that word a lot here in the city we live in of Taipei in the wintertime, especially. Okay, yes. Signs of a bleak future, and we have a question mark. So, you know, maybe there's still some hope. We don't know the final outcome, but we know that it's not headed in a good direction. So we have a question mark there. But we are now talking about modern farm economics, and these modern farm economics have created an enormously productive system of what?
Genetically engineered, chemically dependent agriculture. Oh my goodness, that is an awfully big word, and it's kind of a bit scary actually too, Brandon.
Yeah, if something is genetically engineered, we see that is used to describe a living thing that has had the structure of its genes changed by scientists, which sounds kind of scary sometimes because we're changing things, changing the way things are, you know, operating and so forth within something, within an organism.
Like changing our food.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've come a long way. My uncle is a professor in agricultural economics in New Zealand, and I think about the process of how we did farming, you know, 20 years ago to how we do farming today. Most of my friends that are farmers have actually gone to university. They have degrees in agricultural economics, and when they're at university, they learn how to manage the land better. Now, the thing is, we as the consumer want our food on the table faster or in the supermarket faster. So that is why we've had to come up with a more productive system. To be productive, they've had to introduce genetically engineered products so that we get them what we consider in a more perfect form,
mm-hmm.
Without blemish, I suppose. But we need chemicals to make them like that. And that's where we've become very reliant. Dependent means reliant on it. So maybe as a consumer, we've wanted something fast and as close to perfect as possible, but there's been a sacrifice for that.
Okay, very well explained, Amanda. We see here that it's chemically dependent agriculture, which is a scary thought, I think, when you think about something such as chemicals and being dependent on chemicals. Maybe there are problems involved.
That's right. And that's why some people, like myself, are getting more and more interested in eating just organically grown fruits and vegetables and also meats that are organic. So the animals have been fed the proper grass, or maybe not feed like we think of inside a barn.
Mm. Yeah, because this mass production, you know, they just try to, you know, do things that very cheaply, maybe,
exactly.
and it can cause problems.
And if any of our readers have done their own kind of organic garden or farming, I've definitely had an organic garden of a significant size. You see that the fruits and vegetables do look different, but they're not disappointing in any way, and they taste so much better, folks.
So we're talking about the agriculture being chemically dependent, but we see next that it relies on just one domesticated insect to deliver a third of the food on our plate. That's a lot of the food on our plate, Amanda.
Yeah, maybe our listeners can visualize a plate and a third of that. That is quite a significant amount. And we see that the bee is a domesticated insect. When something is domesticated, that means they are under human control. For example, dogs and cats are domesticated pets.
They're not wild. Right. So, okay, and that insect is dying, we see in the next paragraph. And it is a victim of something, Lois.
Yes, we're told it's a victim of the food system that has come to depend on it.
Okay, and so we see that the food system is causing problems for the bees, and we are going to talk much more about that. If you're a victim of something, this means you suffer from something, like there's violence involved, for example. You know, if there's some crime committed against you and you're harmed, then you are called the victim. In this case, the bees are being harmed, and so they're the victim of the food system. Okay, so recent research points to a complex triangle of causes. What's the first one, Amanda?
Okay, pesticides. And pesticides are used to protect the plants or the crop from what we would call maybe pests. Like a pest is something that will destroy the crop. So a pesticide will stop them being destroyed from that pest.
Right, it kills the insects and also maybe wild plants and other unwanted organisms. Of course, you know, you don't want these insects to kill, you know, the plants that are growing because you want them to produce fruit or vegetables. And so we see, though, that the pesticides may be part of the problem, for the bees at least.
Right.
And so the next one is a flowerless rural landscape dominated by cash crops.
Right. And if you travel in North America, you will notice, if you've been alive as long as I have, that this is certainly true. All of a sudden, there isn't what I consider kind of the meadows, or you used to see lots of wildflowers on the landscape or on the ground or big fields of it. And now it certainly has become cash crop. In my part of the country, a lot of it has become canola. Mm. So for canola oil.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they are raising these crops and they are doing it to sell. So a cash crop,
exactly.
A plant is grown and then you sell it to someone else rather than it just being there all the time. Like Lois was talking about the fields of wildflowers,
yep,
or whatever.
They're just gone.
Okay, so and then we also see the spread of parasites.
Right, a parasite is in our specialized terms, and they are an animal or plant that lives on or in another animal or plant of a different type and feeds from it. And also we have diseases.
All right, okay, so we see a complex triangle. So there are three main reasons here: the pesticides, the cash crops, which includes the flowerless rural landscape, and the spread of parasites and diseases are coupled together. And so these are the problems for the bees, but that they think these are the problems anyway. So together they inflict damage on the honeybees that crisscross the country each spring and summer. So if you're crisscrossing the country, are you staying in one place? What are you doing?
No, you're moving all over the place. Obviously they are flying above the ground, but they're getting from here to there and everywhere.
Okay, and so, yeah, crisscross, you think of lines going,
yes,
back and forth, right? And so they are like migrant laborers. Migrant meaning that you are moving around. And so in our title, that's why we have the word migrant or migrant worker. And what are they doing? They're pollinating everything from
almonds in California to apples in Maine. So, yeah, they move from place to place to pollinate the different fruits and vegetables.
Right, and Maine is in the extreme northeast part of the United States, and of course California is in the extreme western part of the state. And so they are really moving all around and pollinating many different plants.
Exactly. They're a migrant worker. They're going where the work is.
Yes, exactly.
That's what they're doing.
Well, in the past several decades, what's been going on?
The number of crops that depend on bees for pollination has quadrupled. And when something has quadrupled, it's times by four. So it's really increased a lot.
So that's increasing, but what's happening to the bees?
Even the number of hives available to pollinate them has dropped by half.
Okay, and so in summary, the crops are increasing greatly and the bees
are
dying off.
Bees are decreasing greatly.
Yes, they're dying off. And so that's a problem. I like this. These couple of sentences here kind of summarizes really what we're talking about.
Right, that we have an increase of need for the fruits and vegetables to be pollinated, but we don't have enough bees to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we move on to the next sentence and we see something that's happening every winter.
Right, Brandon. It says every winter beekeepers continue to lose a fourth to a third of their hives, raising fears that the decline of these remarkably resilient insects will soon limit the production of foods that Americans take for granted. When I read this, I thought, well, not only are Americans going to get scared about this or nervous about this, how much of your fruit, vegetables, nuts are exported? This is a world problem.
Right.
And it's happening with bees in the United States, as you said when we started the talk today, Brandon, in North America. It's obviously happening in other parts of the world, other continents, and we need to be made aware of it, and that's what's so great about this Nature article today.
Right. And we also see here that these bees, you wouldn't expect them, at least, to die off very easily, right? Because we have this word resilient here, and they are remarkably resilient.
Right. Resilient is also a vocabulary focus word. It says you're able to improve quickly after being hurt or being ill. So bees are able to withstand a lot. So it's really concerning that they are dying off.
And, of course, we often take food for granted. Like I said before, we go into the store and we buy the food and we go home and we eat it. But we see here that may not be possible if this continues to happen with the bees. And so many Americans are taking food for granted. And, of course, if you take something for granted, you're doing what?
Okay, Brandon, that's one of our vocabulary focus words, and we have a great definition for it. It means to never think about something because you believe it will always be available or stay exactly the same.
Okay, and so that's what people are doing with food, and I think people all in many parts of the world would probably take food for granted. Just think if you go to your favorite restaurant and you want to order your favorite dish where they say, I'm sorry, we don't have that anymore because, you know, not enough of it was produced. And so we talk about this serious topic and you may think, well, what can I do about it? I think it's good to be informed about this. You know, maybe we can't directly change this, but we can, you know, inform people and raise awareness. And those who are experts in these fields can do something about it. So I think we can play a part. We may not solve it ourselves, of course, but we can play a part in raising awareness. Okay, so we have much more to talk about tomorrow. And we have actually two more days to talk about Nature's Dying Migrant Worker. So please join us once again tomorrow. Thank you and goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.